Hello and welcome to our UFC 324 post-fight show. My name is Ariel Helwani. It is officially 12:39 a.m. Eastern Time here on the East Coast of the United States and the first UFC event of 2026, the first UFC event of the Paramount Plus era, and I believe the first numbered UFC event to take place in America that didn't air on pay-per-view has come and gone. What a main event. Great card. There's a lot to talk about. We could do a whole show on just the broadcast. We could do a whole show on the bells and whistles and all the new little items and the wrinkles and the intros and all that stuff. And we could get to some of that. And I suspect we'll do a deeper dive on Monday's program. But for now, let's talk about the fights. And of course, the big one heading into this card, this big unveiling of the UFC on Paramount Plus era, was the main event, interim title on the line, lightweight title. Everyone wondering, who's it going to be? Justin Gaethje, Paddy Pimblett. This was one of those main events where it felt like a lot of people were torn. It felt like a 50-50 fight. You had really smart guys like Dustin Poirier telling you Justin Gaethje's got this, and you had really smart other analysts and fighters and fans saying, no, this is Paddy's time. Gaethje's too old. He's 37. You know, he can't take a shot like he once did. He was knocked out by Max Holloway not that long, all that stuff and more. And quite frankly, I was in that camp. But in the end, Justin Gaethje walks away with the UFC interim title. He's an interim champion for the second time in his UFC career. Of course, he was a WSOF champion as well. It was a phenomenal fight. It was a fight that I thought maybe could have ended in the first round, but credit to Paddy Pimblett. The story of this fight is Justin Gaethje is still that guy. He still has that dog in him. He kind of like out-toughed, if you will, Paddy Pimblett. He nailed him with some massive shots throughout. Paddy bloodied, bruised up, all that stuff and more. But the other part of that story is Paddy did not give up. And he has famously said that scousers don't get knocked out. Well, he proved that once again. He did not give up. And a lot of those shots would have put a lot of people away. He said in the post-fight interview that he was hit in the solar plexus in the first round and it kind of changed everything for him. It kind of derailed his momentum. He said he thought he was winning the first round and that changed everything. I had it 2-0 for Justin Gaethje going into the third. I had Paddy Pimblett winning the third. I had Gaethje winning the fourth in a big comeback round. And then I had Paddy kind of stealing that fifth round. So in the end, I'm okay with a 48-47. Officially, one judge had it 48-47. Two other judges had it 49-46. In the end, elementary, the highlight. Justin Gaethje is the new interim champion. Armin Tsarukyan was in attendance. Ilia Topuria not. Haven't heard from him just yet. Perhaps we will while we're doing this. I would imagine both of those guys sort of licking their lips as they were watching this on Saturday. We can get into that as well. All right, let's get into it. No Chuck Mendenhall tonight. He was in Vegas. He was at the Zuffa boxing debut. Go on uncrowned.com right now. His column on the evening was phenomenal. He's flying home trying to beat the storm that is making its way to the northeast of the United States. So that means it's just myself and the patron saint of the Emerald Isle, the host of the critically acclaimed podcast. Yes, there he is. The crack. That thing came up there and I was like, wait a second, is the show starting over again? No, there he is, the one and only Petey Carr. Petey, it's so early. It's 5:42. I'm sure you have no idea what to do with yourself right now.
You can feel the difference, right? It's not just me. I could definitely feel it. Even when I was doing sound check with Frank, we weren't abusing each other. It was very professional. So that's when I knew things are going pretty well here. But what a fight to begin the Paramount era. I thought that main event was brutal and violent and everything that we associate with a Justin Gaethje fight, really. But credit to Paddy Pimblett, he stayed in there the whole way. And as Gaethje said afterwards, I'm starting to believe this scousers don't get knocked out stuff. That was crazy, the punishment he was taking in some of those rounds.
Yeah, of course, we're joking because in this new Paramount Plus era, they have told us they are going to start the main cards at 9 p.m. Eastern. There was a guy who wrote into On the Nose earlier this week, and he's like, you know what? I'm not buying all this early start time nonsense. They're just going to like waste more time, and the cards are going to end at the exact same time. And this is around the same time that a card with one title fight on it would end. And to his credit, the first fight did start 30 minutes into the main card broadcast. It started at around 9:31. We were all watching, and there was a lot of fluff. But Zach Candido, who's the top dog as far as production for the UFC at these events, did tweet that, hey, everyone, chill out. All is well. All is well. We had a lot to get to, but it's going to be at least 10 minutes earlier next week. So there's some good news for all of you. All right, talking about the main event, first things first. And by the way, PZ, we missed you this past week, so I hope you're feeling better. Things weren't the same without you, my man, but it's great to have you back here. And I really wanted you to be here by yourself. Like, I wanted the floor to be yours because I feel like you've had, you know, some time off. I know you did the crack yesterday, but, you know, we needed some personal connection. I very much thought that Gaethje was past his prime. I very much thought that this was being catered for a, you know, a Paddy Pimblett sort of coming out party, if you will. Win the interim title, you've either got the Ilya Topuria mega fight or the Armin Tsarukyan mega fight. And even Gaethje, you know, with the week that he had, speaking about the pay and then the press conference on Thursday and saying like, hey, I'm just here to talk about the fights, felt like he got the whip a little bit. And even in there, I don't know, he looked a little heavier than usual. I just didn't feel, I was like, oh man, this is it. It's all being aligned for a, you know, a Paddy Pimblett massive, like I said, coming out party. And he does that. Holy crap. I'll say, is it fair to say this? Very fun fight, very entertaining fight, all action fight, but not exactly the most technical fight. Like, there were times where, you know, the punches were just kind of, you know, kind of swinging from all different directions, and it wasn't the most technical fight. And that's why I say Ilya or Armin watching that, probably licking their lips, I would imagine, in the aftermath.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a brawl, and it was incredibly entertaining. But you're right in terms of, like, it wasn't the most technical fight in the world. I think at points, and Cormier pointed this out on the broadcast, I think it was around the second and third round, Gaethje stopped using his right hand, and I was thinking, that's one of his biggest weapons. Is that gone now? And he was coming in with a lead left hook. But in the end, it was just a slobber knocker, as they'd say, like, just a drag-em-out brawl. And Paddy wasn't going anywhere. It's just, he looked like he was connecting really hard, but it's like, it's that otherworldly zombie kind of thing that comes over Gaethje in these fights. Like, he does have an extra durability that we've seen in these fights right from the get-go in his UFC tenure as well. And before that as well, but really during that Michael Johnson fight, that has been the hallmark of his UFC tenure. And it was incredible to see him do it now. And look, he is that kind of fighting style where just one day you wake up and you look old. And he had that brutal knockout at the hands of Max Holloway. So I think after that, we're kind of saying, well, a guy who fights like that, he's on bought time. And if he does get in a firefight, it's not going to go very well for him. But he proved tonight that he can still hang in there. And look at how much Paddy Pimblett's striking game improved. People would have laughed at you. Only like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when Paddy signed, if you would have said to them, there's going to be a situation where Paddy is standing in the pocket trading with Justin Gaethje in an interim title fight for the UFC, they would have laughed in your face. But we saw it there tonight. And to his credit, I thought he needed to put him away in the fifth. I had the same as you up until round four. I think they were fairly easy to score. 1-2-4 for Gaethje, the third for Paddy. I thought he needed a finish in the fifth. And he didn't stop trying. Right up until that final bell, he was still going. And it was absolutely electric to watch.
Paddy's first loss since 2018. Quite a run for him. I know the Jared Gordon fight is a little controversial, but officially his first loss since 2018. Do you remember against who, by the way? You watched all of those.
Sorry, was it Soran Back? I'm putting you on the spot here.
It was Soran Back. Golly. Well, actually, look at this guy.
Funny thing, you mentioned that fight in 2018 because that was a massive crossroads in Paddy Pimblett's career. He had a broken hand, a really bad hand injury in that fight. And he knew he had to get Soran Back out of there quickly. And Soran Back's a brilliant fighter. He's actually just come off a knee surgery now. He's trying to get back into fighting. I was only talking to him a few months ago. But Back was this guy coming out of Scandinavia. He was like the lightweight dude. Paddy was, for a long time, the face of Cage Warriors. They put on this massive fight at the Echo, and Paddy's fighting Back. And he gets him in this choke in the first round, but I can remember him telling me after, he couldn't grab his own hand. It was that badly damaged that he couldn't grab it to finish the choke. In the end, Soran Back wins a big decision, but it begins this process for Paddy where he's trying to get his hand fixed, and there's doctors, very similar to what we talk about with Paul Hughes, there's doctors telling him you're never going to fight again. So he's in this depression and he doesn't know what to do. He's not really trained. He's doing a bit of training, but then he re-injures his hand. He has to go for another surgery. It's not looking good. Meanwhile, a new star is on the rise in Liverpool named Darren Till. He has a fight at the Echo against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, which propels him right into a UFC title situation. He is now the face of Liverpoolian MMA, while Paddy was this king in waiting for maybe 4 or 5 years before this. And he had to sit there, not able to fight, never knowing if he was going to fight again. And then in 2020, after he went into some specials, I believe it was, in a university college, he came back. And I believe he was at lightweight at that situation. But if you look at the Cage Warriors lightweight situation at that time, Mason Jones was there, Joey Herbert was there, John McColgan was there. And people were honestly like, Paddy can't compete with these guys. Mm-hmm. Like, never mind UFC. That people are saying that's all gone. He's never going to be in the UFC. He's never going to be the Cage Warriors lightweight champion again. Now, he managed to string some wins together, and then he gets to the UFC. And even then, people are like, ah, oh, well, he's never going to redo anything in the UFC. He goes on this amazing tear. And I know contendership be damned, meritocracy be damned. He ends up in this situation with Justin Gaethje. But what an incredible journey this has been on. And I'm not surprised at all to hear him at the end there saying, like, look, I'm going to be back. This wasn't what I wanted. He's been dealt with his whole career. He's been laughed at, like, look, this guy is a sideshow act. He's just a personality. He's pushed into these positions. And there may be an element of truth to that in terms of what's happened with the UFC here, but this guy constantly comes back and comes back better, and he's had the game completely stacked against him. I know he lost this fight, but what a fucking journey it's been for Paddy Pimblett.
And what a fucking soliloquy that is. Holy smoke. This is why I missed you. Who else could tell us about the history of Paddy Pimblett and Cage Warriors and the whole lightweight scene in Cage Warriors from 7 years ago at 5:50 a.m. local time? I mean, great, great point all around. By the way, I'll take it one step further. He comes to the UFC. Look, I was always drawn to him because of the orange tights, Sakuraba, the walkouts, the music, the dancing, the hair, the fun fighting style, but we didn't really know what his ceiling was. And even when he came to the UFC, that debut against Vendramini, Luigi Vendramini, you know, he got rocked ever so slightly very early on. And you're like, oh, okay, maybe they're going to have to be very, very careful the way in which they book him. And he went in there and he did his thing. And quite frankly, you know, you mentioned meritocracy be damned. I had no problem, not to relitigate all of this, but I had no problem with him being in an interim title fight. It was the other side of the equation that I felt was unwarranted. I thought it should have been Paddy versus Armin, and here's Gaethje coming in there, and it's crazy. Not that long ago, Justin Gaethje is getting knocked out brutally by Max Holloway. He is now the interim champion. Max Holloway is the BMF champion. I'd rather be an interim champion if I had to choose, and he's much closer, in my opinion, to an actual title fight than Max is. Max can get there, but, you know, Gaethje versus Ilya is a fresh matchup. Max versus Ilya isn't. So it's just amazing how quickly things change. And there's a lesson there for Paddy Pimblett. He's just 31. Anyone writing off Paddy, and I know that there were a lot of people who didn't want to believe in him, didn't want to give him his due. A, I hope you are giving him his due. And I hope you are believing in him now that he's a supremely tough guy. Again, he's just 31. He hasn't taken a lot of shots in his career. He could be right back in this position in a fight or two. Just look no further than Sugar Sean O'Malley, who is all of a sudden, and we'll get to him in a moment, right back in the title picture after losing, you know, multiple title fights in the span of a year. So look, you look at those pictures, this continues to rear its ugly head. What did you think of the scenario that played out in the first round, PT? Very clearly, Justin Gaethje hits him with the eye poke. The referee, Mark Goddard, steps in. He's all over it, but he gives him a warning. And then in the second round, we think it's a punch that rocks Paddy, but it ends up looking like, via the replays in between the second and third round, like a thumb that went in his eye, and that was completely missed. Now, they did say on the broadcast that Goddard was looking at it, but in the end, he ended up doing nothing. Do you think those, obviously it's hard to say, we're just speculating, came into play, and how did you feel as though Mark Goddard handled it?
I think in the first round, the one that you're talking about there, it was different in that it happened, and I think Paddy in the moment was like, let's go anyway, let's go. And then Goddard stopped that and got the cloth in and everything like that. But I think Paddy was very much, and we hear this philosophy always said, like, don't give him any reason to stop this fight. Don't say he can't see. So I think in the initial pause, he was like, yeah, I'm fine. He was kind of fixing his eyes. He was like, I'm fine, let's go. I don't know if that disarmed Goddard to a certain degree, if you know what I mean. Like he's not struggling. I don't know if this has affected the course of the fight all that much. Let's keep it going. That's what it seemed to be to me. The one, I think they showed it between the second and third rounds, that poke that he took on the way down. He was definitely eating shots as well at the time, but of course, you're getting poked in the eye in the middle of a flurry, it's going to really hinder your chances of evading those strikes. I think his team will probably be upset with that one. But I was wondering, I wanted to ask you, with Goddard's situation there, right, the passage of play is completely over, okay? The round is over. Mm-hmm. At that point, should he, in your opinion, take a point before the third round starts? And I think it is the third round. I might be confused
yes.
about that. But
yes.
if that's when it's shown, in between the break of rounds and you see the poke, would you like to see him maybe take Gaethje into the middle of the ring before the third round starts yes. and take the point from there?
Why not? If you are using replay, why else are you using the replay? And in Nevada, you can make that call. You can use the replay. So if he felt like it was an actual eye poke, intentional or not, he gave him a very, very stern warning after the first round eye poke, right? My only assumption would be, and of course, we don't have access to him. There is no pool reporter. We can't talk to him and ask him about this tonight. No reporter there can ask him this. But my only assumption is he didn't think it was an eye poke. It looked like one in the replay, but maybe what he saw, a different angle, I don't know, because otherwise he seemed on top of it. And also worth noting, later on, Paddy hit Gaethje below the belt with that knee to the gonads, so to speak. And again, I didn't think there was a warning there. I didn't hear a warning there, but I also did hear, by the way, which you don't often hear, and maybe he just said it a little louder. I heard early, before the first eye poke, I heard Goddard tell Gaethje to close his fist. I don't know if you heard that. Which is maybe something that they're trying to, you know, keep an eye on. You know, it was interesting. Joe Rogan said to Paddy Pimblett, like, essentially, paraphrasing here, that was a win for you, right? Like, a moral victory. Paddy didn't really seem to want to accept that. He was very sad afterwards. He had a very good post-fight interview. He dedicated the fight, the performance, to people in his life who are going through some tough things, talked about mental health, talked about suicides, talked about Diogo Jota and his brother who tragically passed away over the summer. But it didn't seem like he was ready and willing to accept the moral victory. Do you think this is a moral victory for him? I can understand and appreciate and respect the fact that he doesn't want to do that. Do you feel like this is one of those where his stock went up in the aftermath, or given the opponent and given the fact that a lot of people thought he should have won this fight, it doesn't necessarily apply?
Again, I think it is, like, anyone who's been following Paddy, even from just before he signed for the UFC, or even just while he's been in the UFC, nobody thought he was going to be in this situation. Nobody thought, like, he would be trading with Gaethje. And look, Gaethje's 37 now. He's longer in the tooth. But he's proved against Fazayev, like, he's still well capable of coming out on top in a tear-up, and he proved it again tonight. So I do agree with that. Like, Gaethje is one of the best lightweights in the world, and he was in there in the pocket trying to finish this fight in the fifth round, even though he couldn't. I think that's huge. And I think there is this notion of, especially when the UFC get behind you, right? The superstar. Like, we heard Bisping say, I haven't seen this since Conor McGregor. And I'm sure O'Malley and Ilia Topuria and everyone else was like, I thought I was a pretty big deal, you know, at the time. Pereira, all these guys. But, you know, the machine felt like it was very much behind him. And it's natural that you're going to come with a lot of hate when you get into that situation. When Dana White is talking about this guy has everything it takes to be a superstar, I think a lot of people are kind of like, well, this is just a guy on the gravy train. This is Dana White privilege, as they say. I think he's proven tonight that he is far more than that. And honestly, we didn't even see him really enter his wheelhouse outside of being stuck in a front headlock. Like, that's, I wonder if Paddy and his coaches will think, well, maybe we fell in love with our hands a bit too much in the striking, even though it's improved so, so well. We didn't see the signature Paddy the Baddy, which is, I thought he was trying to size up an old flying triangle a few times there when his back was against the fence. I could see him getting the overhook on one side of Gaethje's arms. I didn't see him work to the ground and try and get a back take in. But again, Gaethje's notoriously brilliant takedown defense. I can remember before he fought Khabib, I don't think anyone had taken him down in the UFC up until that point. So he's a very, very tricky and tenured and savvy customer. So for Paddy to come away like that, and look, took an awesome amount of punishment as well. He was wearing the damage all over his face. I've never seen Paddy. I've been watching Paddy for 13, 14 years. I have never seen him wear that kind of damage on his face. I can't even remember anything even close to it, to be honest. So I think he deserves credit.
I agree. I remember someone asking him earlier in the week if he's sort of like jonesing to be in one of those brawls, those firefights, because he's never been in one before. Well, he was just in one. By the way, Justin Gaethje, 3 for 3 as far as takedowns were concerned. Paddy, 0 for 5. And there were a couple points in between rounds where I heard Paddy's corner, especially early on, tried to urge him to get the fight to the ground. He did try at least 5 times, but it was hard to close the distance on someone like Justin Gaethje, who was just doing such a phenomenal job at bringing so much action and attack to Paddy Pimblett. You know, earlier in the week, Justin Gaethje made some headlines talking about the fact that, you know, nothing's gone up in this Paramount Plus deal for him. And we could talk about that, and I suspect we'll get into more of that because I have some intel into all of that later in the week. I don't think this is the time to really speak about it. And like I said, at the press conference, he didn't want to talk about it. Well, this morning, we did find out via the Sports Business Journal, a reporter named Adam Stern, that, all right, the first domino has fallen in terms of what kind of increases the fighters can expect. And the easiest one to increase is obviously the bonuses. So the old system, well, the most recent, because it's changed a lot. People forget in 2011 and 2010, 16, it was actually right? A lot higher. Yeah, but as of late last year, the way it ended was 50K each. So 50K for the two performance bonuses and then 50K each for Fight of the Night. They increased everything to 100K. So 200Ks for Fight of the Night and then two performance bonuses, 100K. They've added also 25K to anyone who gets a finish of any kind, knockout or submission, TKO, KO, submission on the card. So that has all gone up. And the winners of said bonuses, the performance bonuses, Ty Miller and Josh Hokit. And then, of course, Justin Gaethje and Paddy Pimblett win 100K each for Fight of the Night. And then 25K go to the other fighters who got finishes on the card. We'll talk about all of them, Waldo Cortez Acosta and Nikita Krylov. So a little promising news for the fighters. I do think it's a lot of much ado about nothing if you actually consider how much they are making and this little bump and everyone is so fixated on the bonuses when really like the base pay.
An extra $800 million a year, you know?
You know, it's just...
Fair play, lads. You know,
yeah.
Someone sent me this earlier, at maximum, if every single person got a finish in the UFC, right? Every single fight was finished, so this isn't going to happen now. It would be something like $26.5 million they'd be giving out extra a year while they're getting an extra $800 million a year.
Right.
I put out something last night, and look, I know we're not going to relitigate this, as you said. Yeah, I was just kind of saying, you know, we've been doing this a long time. I don't like to see fighters leave the sport with no money. And then was like, well, there you go, Petey, shut the fuck up. You know, like, this has cured it all. I'm like, are you crazy? Is it?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I think it's done, no, it's but, insane. It's insane.
Yeah.
A few legends weighing in. Here's Khabib Nurmagomedov saying, Justin Gaethje, absolute legend. My congratulations. True. What a fight. And don't forget, Justin, almost 38. I mean, technically, he's closer to 37. He turned 37 in November, but fair enough.
Listen, almost that, 38, right?
Listen.
It's good copy.
He's getting closer. 37.2 months. a little less... congratulatory and positive is one Armin Tsarukyan who tweets, this clown couldn't beat Gaethje on antibiotics. So that's his take because, of course, Justin Gaethje had something on his neck. Who knows? A reporter, credit to him, did ask him about it. He seemed to take it very personally and asked him if he wanted to share any ailments that he was going through and if he knew about the HIPAA laws. So
who's to check?
A new one. Yeah, who is to check, Bob?
Who is to, that's a good question.
I do feel like it was a fair question, but nevertheless, when Justin Gaethje didn't like it. And so let me ask you this. Do you think Armin is next for Ilya? Do you think Armin is fighting Gaethje? Do you think Armin is fighting Paddy? Do you think Ilya is fighting Gaethje? Do you think Ilya is fighting Armin?
It's what a bit of a mess. Happens? Now, Jim, it's a bit of a mess, right? Oh, man.
What is your prediction? How does the cookie crumble here? Who's based on what we saw here, and Dana White did say he's going to work on the White House card. Who knows if any of those guys will factor in? Answer me this in your gut right now. Ilya's next opponent, Armin's next opponent, Gaethje's next opponent, Paddy's next opponent.
So here's the thing. They have made Gaethje the number one contender by giving him the interim title. There's absolutely no point and allowing him to fight for an interim title, putting an interim title around his waist, and then not have him fight Ilya, even though that's not the
you mean like
see.
You mean like what they did with Tom Aspinall when they put an interim title around his waist and had him defend that?
There is
right?
precedent
like,
there.
Literally, like a year and a half ago. Okay, yeah, okay, perfect.
I know, but Dana kind of specifically said this as well, even though he's never gone back on anything he said. Tom as we Aspinall, know, he's never told a lie. I think that's what they're gonna do. I don't know why they hate Artem. Well, Artem, I know he said Armin. I don't know why they beef him the way they do. They give him a lot of shit. They, you know, headbutting lads isn't best advised, I will say, at weigh-ins. But I just think that's the way they're going to go. And I think it leaves him at a loose end. Because essentially, and Ben Folk said this on the crack on Friday, by them saying, Dana White said, Ilya is going to fight the winner of Paddy and Gaethje, they're essentially telling Armin, well, you're not going to fight for the title until 2027. So what the hell do you do with him in that case? And if it is, like, that's my favorite fight. The fight I'd love to see is Ilya v. Armin. I think they're going to go Ilya v. Gaethje because they've done this interim title and they have to justify it somewhere. I don't know what that means for Armin. I do think that regardless of what happens with Hooker in his fight against BSD, he's probably fighting Paddy Pimblett because they'll want to capitalize on the beef there. Tell me, you figure out. You're better at this stuff than me. Please tell me what is going to happen here.
Can I tell you what I want or what I think? What do you prefer?
Let's do what you want first and then what you think second.
Oh, what I want is Ilya versus Armin.
Okay, I'm with
you. What I want is Ilya versus Armin.
So what you do with Gaethje in that case? Your interim champion?
Yeah, because he's got a history with Charles and Max. Can I throw one out your way?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. I know it's crazy. Ilya, Armin, Justin, Connor.
That, you know what? I love the idea White because House. It's, yeah.
America against the world. Those two have been talking smack about each other for a very long time.
And you know what? I think it's probably the one fight that Gaethje would say, all right. You know, Gaethje was very picky ahead of this. He was only fighting for a title. We were all kind of scoffing at that. After the Max Holloway situation, he kind of won more ground with it after Fazayev. I think that is the one fight where he'd be like, well, if you're going to give me that one, I will stand aside for Armin Velia. But do the UFC do that?
Oh, I think the reason why they wanted to wait so much, like they kept saying, we're waiting until this card, is to see how this plays out. By the way, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to do Paddy versus Connor next. There's a whole weird thing going on with the Connor thing that is very like 2020 pandemic vibes, to where I think they're coming to the realization that like there's no pay-per-view, there's no gate, there's no sponsors at this White House event on the cage. How are they going to offset that? And again, more discussion for a later date.
If he gets a knockout,
the finish. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. It's a good, didn't think it's of a that good one. Point. But yes, Armin versus Ilya is the fight that I want to see. Ilya versus Gaethje. Who do you favor in that? If it is Ilya. Truly, Armin versus Gaethje.
Armin.
Yeah.
Armin versus Ilya. Who the fuck knows? Kind of, you know, that's really
box office. Yeah. Here's Dustin Poirier weighing in. Welcome to the big leagues, Patrick. One up for the legends, Dustin. Earlier in the week. Saying that he thought Gaethje was going to win. Paddy didn't seem to like that. He has weighed in and he seems very happy. Here's an interesting one from Islam Makhachev, the reigning defending welterweight champion. What was brought on a platter turned out to be inedible.
Wow.
I feel like Islam thought he cooked with that one, and I don't know if it quite... I understand what he's trying to say, like the
I
title...
Don't. I don't understand what he's trying to say.
I think he's trying to say it was being served up to Paddy, and like it didn't quite go down the right way. Well, I don't know.
Who was being okay?
The title.
Okay. Sorry.
You know what I'm saying? In any event, we'll find out. Perhaps Dana White will weigh in. Dana White has already said some things to the media. He said that the event exceeded expectations beyond belief for Paramount. He says it exceeded it by double. He said that Paddy Pimblett told him Justin Gaethje that he would knock out Justin Gaethje, and that's what he tried to do. Gaethje told him that he is 100% and that he feels better than he has for most fight. White asked for Pimblett to be transported to the hospital immediately. Okay, let's talk about the co-main event. Let's talk about Sugar Sean O'Malley, Song Yadong. How did you score this fight? In the end, worth noting, Sean O'Malley won. He's back on track. He did call for Petr Yan, but shout out to him. He did say, if Merab is next, I'm all good with that. He deserves it, essentially, which I thought was admirable because some people might try to cut the line. Merab saying earlier this week that he thinks he's next, that he's been told he's next, but it's not going to happen at the White House. They're not going to have a Russian at the White House. This is what he said, not what I'm saying. What did you think? Who won? And what do you think of Sean's performance? He was the one that the judges gave the nod to. 29-28 each.
Yeah, I had a 29-28 for Sean O'Malley. I didn't win the first round and the third round. I know the first round was the closest. I think the second round and third round pretty easy to score. I think he was very tentative because he knew what was riding on this. Everybody wants to see the Yan rematch. They want to see it over five rounds. The first time they met was absolutely electrifying. Song in a great second round, and he started really working the legs of O'Malley to the point where I was kind of thinking, what is he going to look like in the third round here? But I think it was probably his best round in the end. He found an extra gear. He found his he found Song at the end of his backhand. And look, you could kind of tell afterwards how much it meant to him. You know, he was kind of going back between humble, as you say there, with the Merab kind of, you know, the sensitivity towards his situation, and then just being absolutely elated being back in the win column. Look, I think if there's one thing that Merab should learn from last year is that the schedule killed him. And it changed how he fought. And the unbeatable style that he had in the first three fights of that year, where we were kind of saying this is a generational run, that wasn't there in that fourth fight against Yan. And maybe that was all Yan. But I do feel like he was kind of like Icarus flying too close to the sun and his wings have melted off and he fell back down to earth. I don't think it'd be the worst thing in the world for Merab to take an extended period of time off, let himself heal, because there's no doubt there was damage done to his body competing that many times in such high-stakes bouts last year. Also, I'm saying that a bit selfishly because I want Yan v. O'Malley. I'm sorry. I know I'm on here shaking my fist about meritocracy all the time, but I just think it's a brilliant, brilliant fight. And I think it's the biggest fight they can probably make at bantamweight has to have O'Malley involved in it, as far as I'm concerned. And I think they will make magic happen. And I need to see it again.
Tremendous fight. It would be a tremendous rematch, especially... you know, maybe O'Malley's got his groove back. Who knows? Yan certainly has got his groove back. Corey Sandhagen was sitting cage side or relatively close to cage side, and he said, I want O'Malley next. And that's another one that I would love to see before it's all said and done, those two. I would love to see it. So I don't hate the idea of Merab versus Petr Yan and then O'Malley versus Sandhagen. If Sandhagen wins, he has a history with the two of them. I don't know how sellable those fights are right now. So it does create a wrench. UFC doesn't tend to worry about that sort of thing right now, but I thought it was a great performance from Sean O'Malley. I agreed with the judges' scorecards. I thought he won the first and third. Song is such a strong bantamweight, and he was doing really well. He looked ready for the moment. It didn't seem like the moment was too big for him. His striking looked great. I was impressed with him overall, but Sean just did enough in a three-round fight. Looking at the stats, relatively close as far as total strikes landed. Sean O'Malley, 67 of 111. Song Yadong, 69 of 130. Wow. And Yadong, 3 of 7 takedowns. O'Malley didn't shoot once. But again, you can't really necessarily look at the fights like that. O'Malley edged him in the first, and he certainly edged him in the third. He landed 25 total strikes, and Song just landed 12. Song landing 34 in the second. And O'Malley 20 plus 2 of 4 as far as takedown attempts. So I thought they nailed it. I thought the judges got it right. And I thought it was a great performance from Sean. He did just enough to win the fight. Song is a really tough guy to put away. But to see, you know, Sean O'Malley come back and look like that. The last time Sean O'Malley won a fight, because he lost it to, was the Marlon Vera fight back in March of 2024. Jeez. That's how long ago, almost 2 years.
That's crazy.
Since his last win, you know?
That's crazy,
And there were some layoffs there in between. So shout out to him. A great win for Sean O'Malley. Great to see him back on track. And Song will, again, he's one of those guys. I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. I think he'll still be a factor in this weight class. Let me go through the rest of the results, and then we'll come back. Waldo Cortez Acosta defeated Derek Lewis, and I think a lot of people thought that this would be a massive, massive moment for Derek Lewis because Donald Trump wanted him on the White House. He could still be on the White House card. But Walder Cortez Acosta made Derek Lewis kind of look like he was 40 years old. This was a big win for Waldo, a guy who had a tremendous 2025, went 4-1. He comes back, gets this opportunity. We had reported that they wanted to do Derek Lewis versus Rico Verhoeven, and it just looked like he kind of just broke Derek Lewis in that second round. So shout out to the former Cincinnati Reds prospect, WCA, representing the Dominican Republic. Natalia Silva beat Rose Namajunas. John Silva beat Arnold Allen, both via unanimous decision. Another unanimous decision, Umar Nurmagomedov versus Davidson Figueiredo. Atiba Gautier with the unanimous decision win over Andrei Puliev. Nikita Krylov, as I mentioned, with the third round victory, the TKO win over Modestus Bukauskas. Alex Perez defeated Charles Johnson. Great win for him in the first round. Josh Hokett defeated Denzel Freeman in the final second of the first round. And Ty Miller did the exact same in the very first fight of the night, defeating Adam Fugit in the final second of the first round. So shout out to him. So Ty Miller gets, those guys got the bonuses. So only two extra bonuses for those finishes. Let's go back to Waldo Cortez Acosta beating Derek Lewis. Were you surprised that he did that to him? Were you surprised that it seemed like he just broke him in the end? Lewis was missing shots, and then he just kind of like dropped him with a jab, and it seemed like Lewis was done.
Yeah, I feel like Derek Lewis was really lending himself to a fight that will have a finish in it. You know, sometimes we've seen him kind of sit in the back burner and try to look for that big right hand, but Waldo kind of forced action on him the whole time. He was landing his jab. He has a lovely jab, and he was peppering him with that, and I think Derek felt the need, like, I need to try and get this guy off me, and that kind of led to his demise in the end. I think it's pretty incredible, the Waldo Cortez Acosta situation, because let's not forget, like, before Tom Aspinall fought Cyril Gane, everybody was kind of saying, this division, there's nothing going on with this division. The Aspinall v. Gane fight goes the way it does, and suddenly everyone's like, Gane's going to win the fight if they have a rematch. And then you have Waldo Cortez the next week, having his eye situation, coming back and winning VKO against Tom Aspinall's training partner. Suddenly, the bases are loaded, to borrow a baseball term there for, you know, Waldo Cortez Acosta.
Wow.
But suddenly, if Aspinall was to come back, there are two intriguing fights where people were saying these guys are bums before. Now, I don't know if that's anytime close. I would take the fact that we have not heard much from the Aspinall camp as not great news, to be honest, because I know how much those guys want to fight. I know how active they want to be. So unfortunately for us, we have this guy at heavyweight, the champion of the world, and we just don't know what's next for him. My question to you is, Ariel, in the absence of Aspinall, because we still haven't heard, we don't know how that is progressing, in the absence of Aspinall, do we go back to an interim situation? Do we do Gane v. Waldo Cortez Acosta? What do you do with heavyweight now? That I feel really has become a tragedy because the John Jones v. Tom Aspinall fight couldn't happen, unfortunately.
Yeah. Worth noting, Waldo did call out Curtis Blaydes afterwards, and I don't hate that. Right now, he's five,
that's
Blaydes
not a, that's
is four.
A good show, yeah.
Don't hate that one for him. It's a nice little step up. Blaydes, obviously, with the wrestling as well. The guy who has the most momentum is Waldo Cortez. So if they decide to do an interim title fight, and quite frankly, I don't think we're there just yet.
No.
There's a lot of fights that could be filled up and a lot of title fights. And Tom and Cyril just fought in October, and I think that they want to try to capitalize on that rematch and the bad blood. But yeah, I mean, Waldo could factor into that. But I say go with Curtis Blaydes. I say go with that fight if that is the one. He wants to be active. He has said he wants to fight 5-6 times a year. So it's not like he's going to come back in 6 months and the timing doesn't work out. No, this could work out. It's unbelievable, this guy. Like, I think he was kind of the butt of a lot of people's jokes early on, and people didn't quite know what to make of him. And certainly the Dominican Republic, not known to be a hotbed of MMA as far as prospects are concerned. So very, very impressive what he's done. And I think we kind of just forgot, because Derek Lewis is so much fun, that he is 40, and heavyweights tend to have a longer shelf life. But I just felt like he looked the age tonight against the younger fighter. I'm not saying he's not going to be on that White House card, because it seems like the president loves him for some reason, is a massive fan. He told a story earlier in the week that he got a call from the president, didn't recognize the number, so he didn't pick up the call, which is incredible. I just thought it would say like White House, you know, like, yeah, or something like that. Like they don't even have the phone number attached to it, no, you know, something. But nevertheless, a big win for Waldo, and his winning ways continue. Natalia Silva now has the second longest winning streak in flyweight history, 8 in a row. Did she do enough, in your opinion, in her victory over Rose Namajunas, a unanimous decision victory, which at times looked like it was a little bit tougher than maybe she expected? And, you know, she gets it, and I think everyone thought that she deserved it. Did she do enough, in your opinion, to warrant that title shot against Valentina, who I thought she was going to fight next when this fight was originally supposed to be Alexa Grasso versus Rose? Natalia replaces Alexa and I think secured her spot. What did you think?
Yeah, I think just purely from a meritocracy point of view, you have to give it to her at this point. As you said, that winning streak is not to be trifled with, but I don't think it was an exclamation point. I think Rose really gave her a good fight. I think the first round was close, Rose at the second, and then Silva won the third. But I guess it's not like a set the world on fire kind of situation. Like, you don't, as often happens in the lead up to Valentina fights, like, you know, it's just someone who keeps winning and they go in against her and she usually finds a way to do it. But I just didn't come away from it thinking, if I'm being completely honest, as impressive as the win streak is, I just didn't come away from going, oh, I need to see this fight. I need to see this woman fight Valentina Shevchenko. And I often do feel like that, because I do feel like she is the most dominant champion, you know, like she is so far ahead of the pack in that division.
Yeah, I thought, like I said, I thought she should have gotten the title shot. Rose told us earlier in the week that she was told if she would have won, she was going to get the title shot. And Dana White just said at the press conference that Natalia was told the same. And so I suspect that she is going to get that title shot against Valentina. And quite frankly, I don't know who else there is. Valentina has already fought Manon Fiorot, Alexa Grasso. Blanchfield is coming up there. There's obviously Macy Barber, who has the fight against Alexa Grasso as well. And then we're getting to the back half of the division. I mean, there's no one else. There's clearly no one else. The timing isn't exactly great because Valentina fought in November, but I don't think she minds a couple of extra months off. So it seems like Natalia Silva will get the next shot at 125. Shout out to her. Shout out to Brazil. And shout out to another Brazilian who was victorious, John Silva, with the win over Arnold Allen. Look, we all love Arnold. He's very fun. He was doing some like voodoo stuff. What is that stuff that he was doing at the weigh-ins? And he was showing the tattoo. I don't know what it was. He was pulling out all the tricks. But in the end, John Silva, the very emotional John Silva, he was emotional throughout. He was emotional before and after, in the middle as well. It did seem like he pissed off. It did seem like he pissed off Arnie with the jumping off the back thing.
I can imagine that.
I felt like Arnie was a little bit disrespected. He even tweeted about it. I think we do have the exchange here.
Does he have the
he gave a shout out to John Silva for the performance, and there he said good to be back after the layoff. Had fun out there against a great opponent. Felt I did enough, but that's the game. Been here before. Hope you enjoyed the fight. Love putting on fun fights, but I'm not giving up on my goals of being champion. John Silva replied, thank you so much for sharing the octagon with me. He was very complimentary. And here's Arnold Allen saying, likewise, brother. Thanks for the fight. I am not a surfboard, though.
That's a good point to make, you know? He's kind of talking out both sides of his mouth, this John Silva fella. Or barking out both sides of his mouth, should I say.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, I respect you so much. You know, you're one of my heroes. But you're also standing on him like he's a doormat in the final round of the fight. It's mixed messaging. All right.
Arnold wanted nothing to do with that scene afterwards where he like brought him into the post fight and he's telling him how she loves him. Like, I think he wanted to just get out of that. Did you see that?
I think if there's no camera there, he's telling the fuck off and just move on.
Yeah, the camera
is right there in his face. He's like, I can't fucking believe you're doing this to me, mate. I can't believe you're trying to make me share an emotional moment with you when I'm pissed off that I didn't win this decision. Great fight, by the way. Obviously,
yes.
Everybody loves finishes and everybody wants to see someone getting splattered. But there was a lot of really good fights that went the distance tonight. This was one of them. I thought Arnold fought absolutely brilliantly in the first round. And I thought it was interesting that Faraz noticed that it was this kind of very movement heavy style that Arnold was using, which he had great success with in the first round, that may have kind of taken the wind out of his sails towards the end, because just before the third round, Faraz said to him, like, look, you have to stop moving now, mate. Like, you know, you are gassing yourself too much. You need to just stand in the pocket and trade with him. And I think that's what it did. It was an incredibly close fight. I can fully see Arnold thinking I won that fight, but I did have it for Silva. I had Arnold win the first round, Silva win the second and third. Very close rounds. Really, really good fight. I do think if those lads fought again 10 times, it could go 5-5. Like, you know, really, really close fight. Just some switches and dynamics that I think worked well for John Silva this time around. But really, really good fight. And I don't think Arnold should give up on his dream to be a champion, because he's always so painfully close. And as you say, he has become the most reluctant fan favorite I think we've ever seen in the UFC. People love this guy. Do you remember the times I get sent his random tweets and things like that? He is a baby face of the sport. So I want to see him back in these situations. And I hope that he will get that patch of green sometime, a little bit of a rub of the green and a bit of luck with his matchmaking along the way.
Can I tell you what's my New Year's resolution for Arnie?
What?
Consistency. Can we get three fights in this year? Is that possible? I know that's a little bit crazy. His last fight was in July of 2024. That middle of the night card in Manchester. That's the last time he fought, the poor guy. Prior to that, he fought in January. So he fought twice in 2024. Then it's once in 23, once in 22. Excuse me, twice in 22. Once in 21. Once in 20. Twice in 19. Once in 18, once in 17. You see the point? Like, it's no more than twice. Usually it's once. And then he missed all of 2025. I just hope he can. It's tough to jump in there and fight a John Silva when you've been out for, you know, a year and a half with his energy. And this guy's been quite active over the past 365 days. So I just hope he can get a little consistency. And hopefully no injuries after this fight, because, you know, he's had the hand injuries and whatnot. Yeah. John Silva's a fan favorite as well. I could see him rubbing some people the wrong way with the emotion and whatnot, but I think he's fun. And that was a great fight as well. Like, I thought, if not for the main, I thought these two were going to win the fight of the night. I thought it was a really, really fun fight. So shout out to both of them for the great performance. Umar Nurmagomedov was a huge favorite going into this fight against Davis Figueiredo. And there was a moment there, like,
round towards the end there.
Yeah, it was just a brief moment. But Umar does the job. I think the Jan win has kind of delayed his return back to the title picture. And I think this O'Malley win does the same. I felt like for a moment he was like right there, you know, after getting back on track, after losing the title fight. I don't feel like he's very much in the mix at the moment at 135 as far as the title picture. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree. I kind of feel the same way about that fight as I do with the Natalie Silva fight. You know, it was like, I'm not jumping up and down for him, mate. Like, I'm not, this is, has to be the guy. He is a brilliant fighting style. He's unbelievably effective. I just don't think, I think Davis and Figueiredo is a really hard guy to look good against, and even though he won every round, I felt I just don't think it really hammered at home. I don't think you get the super seed like an O'Malley or Jan or a Marab Jan 3 with that fight, if you get me. I think you needed to be a bit more special. I think you needed to put a massive exclamation mark on it if you're going to skip those guys. And I just didn't think he did it tonight. He's a brilliant fighter. I'm sure he's going to fight for the title again soon, but it's just not now, just not next.
Yeah. But I mean, he's doing his job. He had Khabib there, he had Islam there, he had the whole crew there, continued to win. He's 20-1 now. He's so dominant. He's a very, very tough. He's got a great name. He's a very tough puzzle to figure out. So I think he will be a factor for a very long time. I mean, look at that crew right there. That is
iconic.
That is as good as it gets, no doubt about it. So congratulations to him. I thought Atiba Gotye was going to win in like the first 60 seconds of his fight against Andrei Pulev. And
sorry,
golly,
I mean, pals. Once again, I'm sorry. Okay, I did it again.
Busted it again. Which one we did? It's a crazy thing because honestly, like he knocked him down with the first punch. He looks so big out there. He is so strong.
He impaled him. with the first punch. Like, how did the fight continue? Like, he absolutely sent
And Puliyev is kind of a lanky 185er. Credit to this guy. Like, he lost the fight, but holy shit, I can't believe he went the distance with him. Gaethje, who never leaves the first round, the fact that he even survived was, I mean, talk about a moral victory. That was a moral victory, if you ask me. Gaethje continues to be great. He called for Marvin Vettori afterwards. But I mean, just look at his muscles in these shots. It looks like a light heavyweight going up against a middleweight here. I can't believe Puliyev survived. I really can't. I thought it was going to be done in 60 to 90 seconds.
Yeah. And look, I think this is a decent speed bump for Atiba, because shit gets crazy when you're on that ascent. Ask Bo Nickel. Ask Aaron Pico. Ask so many other guys that's happened in the past. There's no harm in this. Like, he's gone out there. He's dominated this dude. He's knocked him down multiple times. He just couldn't find the finish. But it does kind of, it slows that wild, you know, momentum that he had, where I was like, oh, holy shit. And everyone's picking him as they're going to watch in 2026, including us. Joe Rogan's talking about on his podcast. Like, this is a huge meteoric rise for a guy who only moved to Manchester top team a couple of years ago, started living in Carl Prince's dad's house, and made friends with Lerone Murphy and all these dudes, and suddenly became one of the best fighters in the world, it would seem, at 185. I think this isn't the worst thing that could happen to him. There's lessons to be learned there as well. I've heard Carl Prince, the head coach of Manchester top team, constantly say, like, when we first got this dude, he would just go balls to the wall. Like, he was fighting for his life. Like, he needs to learn more about these fights and go the distance. Learn how to kind of pace yourself throughout it. Like, you don't have to just go for the kill all the time. I think this will be a valuable lesson for them. And I love what that team's doing. I love how they've integrated Atiba into the team. Lewis McGrillin was there in the corner today. It just seems like a bunch of guys in the perfect moment. It happens with gyms where they just hit a great moment. You had it with the Fighting Nerds, of course, City Kickboxing, SBG, Next Gen in Liverpool there with Molly and Paddy too. This feels like an MTT moment. And although people will be cursing them for ruining their parlays, and not me, Atiba, I swear to God, I'm completely fine with it. Completely fine. But I think it will be good in the long run for him.
For sure. Get those rounds in. Get that that cage time up. And he got the win. So nothing to feel too bad about. But yes.
I want to ask you, right? You were bringing up ages earlier. 40 years old, Derek Lewis. 37 years old, Justin Gaethje.
Yeah.
How in the name of God is Nikita Krylov still 33 years of age?
It's unbelievable.
Like, this guy has been around. No joke. When did he start competing? When he was 11? Like, what the hell is this? How is he 33?
It feels like we've been talking about him for so long, too. His UFC debut came, I'm going to say, off now, the top of the dome.
Now, he had two tenures, right?
2013. Yeah, like the first one.
Okay.
2013, August 31st. Is it Soa Palelei? Yeah, it was.
Of course, you got that right, mate.
Soa Palelei.
No, I don't want to play the game. Fight. Don't start asking me the date of his third fight and stuff. Right? I don't want to do it.
Do you remember when he left?
No.
Okay, and then he came back. Who did he fight? Oh, he fought Jan Błachowicz, 2018. So this run is you know, almost 8 years now. Unbelievably. Big win for him.
Remember, you were trying to get him back. And he was like, I'm not ready. I'm not ready. He was like, leave me here in Russia for a while and I'll come back when I'm ready. And then he comes back and he's been here since. It's crazy.
Crazy. Yeah. Big win for him. He gets to win with 3 seconds left in the third round of his fight against Bukauskas. Charles Johnson was talking a lot before. Sorry, I'm moving along. Charles Johnson was talking a lot. We're not going to do a deep dive now on that one at 1:30. He was talking a lot before the fight about, you know, being a top dog, being, you know, the guy who beat Josh Van, being undefeated, all that stuff. Alex Perez reminded him that you got to get by him first. Alex Perez, a former title contender. Huge win for him in the first round of their fight. Charles Johnson didn't, I think, love the stoppage, but I think it was the right stoppage. I had no problem with it. Josh Hokut, like I said, with the big win, had a Hokut-like post-fight interview. I don't think Dana White liked it based on his post-fight press conference. He's trying to stick out. He's doing his job. What impressed me the most about it was, how does he remember all of that? Like, he had it all down. He had it all rhyming. I can't believe you can remember all of that after getting involved in a fight. And a lot of people are very high on Ty Miller. He improves to 7-0, defeating Adam Fugit in the first round of their fight with just 1 second left in the first round. I want to get some news and notes here, PT, before we call it a night. In the Atiba Gaethje-Andre Puliyev fight, footage came out of the referee Mark Smith being kind of like helped to the back. I don't know if you saw that. Well, Dana White revealed in his post-fight press conference that he tore his ACL in that fight. So
maybe he could have got a stoppage and he just couldn't get over there in time. Is that what you're trying to tell me? That first punch, maybe his knee went and he's like, I could have been there. That's what I'm saying.
Literally not saying anything even remotely close to that, but it's just a very sad scene for a referee. We don't really see that.
Hey, get well soon. Sorry, Mark. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, Thanks, yeah.
Sorry. That's all I was saying.
You know, we're talking about a lot of fights, but one fight that did not take place today, a fight that was canceled just a couple hours before the card was scheduled to start, Alex Hernandez versus Michael Johnson. And once again, in a scene that has become all too common, started to see some tweets out there about betting irregularities, some suspicious activity, all that stuff and more. The UFC pulled the fight, but they did not give a reason. Dana White at the post-fight press conference confirmed that it was due to the betting irregularities and basically said, we're not doing this again. And you know what? I give them a lot of credit because that's what they should have done with the Isaac Delgarian fight. Why they went through with that fight after there was all this evidence of some wackiness going on, after you talk to the guy, just wash your hands of it. Live to fight another day. If there's nothing to be seen here, put that card on next week's card. Put that card on the card on February. Put that fight on the February 7th card, or send them to Australia. Probably not, but you get the point. They got ahead of it. It's the right call. Easier to do that than have a situation where all of a sudden it's like, wait, what? What just happened there? This is a black eye. And you don't want that on your Paramount Plus debut. You definitely don't want that. Speaking of the Paramount Plus debut, thought it went well, Pete. Kate Scott there made it feel big. Some nice bells and whistles. The intro with the curtain.
That was
and
sick.
The drop it
that
down. So and the Travis Barker stuff. Like, it felt actually like they did. They put in a little more effort than what we had seen, certainly towards the very end of the ESPN deal. But even from what I remember, the beginning of the ESPN deal, like I was at that first ESPN show. I never felt like they made it into that. The show in Brooklyn had nothing compared to today's show. They had a red carpet. Like, I don't know. It just felt like they really, really got behind it. And people are complaining about, you know, I'm certainly still complaining about the PIP. I can't believe you can't minimize on the app. I know I experienced this. You didn't. You got it on TNT Sports pay-per-view. But you can't minimize. Like, if I get a text and people are like, Ariel.
It's not good for your workflow. It's not good for your workflow.
But I'm walking the dog. I get a text message. I swipe out. Now I'm gone.
That's ridiculous.
They're like, why don't you have an iPad? I'm like, I'm doing things, all right? Do you know how many times there's like a fight in the middle of the day and I'm like my kid's soccer and I have to like listen to the car. Like,
I think you watch the majority of fights at your son's soccer games, honestly. Like international fights, European fights, all that stuff.
But if I'm now in a situation where I can't swipe up, this is a disaster. This is an absolute disaster. Charge me $150 for the swipe up. I need the swipe up. I need the swipe.
You're going to have to bring the iPad, mate. You're going to have the iPad phone out. That's where it's going to go.
I'm going to start taking pictures with the iPad like those people at Disney World. I'm going to run through some things. Tell me if you feel strongly about any of them. It seems like Bet365 is a new sponsor. Congrats. The curtain video thing, Bruce in the middle, was super cool. I love Travis Barker. Some might say, I consider him a close personal friend. Wow. He's incredible. I love Blink-182. I did feel like a song about meeting a girl at a rock show wasn't the most appropriate song. It's like, I fell in love with the girl at the rock show. And it's like, it's like,
that just
she said what,
MMA
and I told her that I didn't know. She's so cool, and it's like everything's better when she's a. It's like literally about meeting a girl at a rock show. What does this have to do with the UFC card? Like, even what's my age again? Like, you're like, oh, what's my age again? Kind of works because the UFC is like, they're like 33 now, but they're still cool and young. You know, I don't know, but meeting the girl at the rock show just felt like the wrong fit. Do you see what I'm saying?
I think you're a hater, man. That's like, you know, when I hear rock show.
I'm not a hater.
I think UFC. I go, that's my jam. That's where I go. When I think of rock show, I think UFC event. Meet a girl, go and have a beer and have some chicken wings with my friends. That's what it says to me.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That too. Thought it was weird that DC was wearing a white suit when the other guys were wearing black, but he did make a comment about that. Shout out to him. Like I said, they started at 9:30 instead of the earlier start time by the time, you know, the 30 minutes, but there was a lot of bells and whistles, as Zach said. And I did want to mention, congratulations to Dominic Cruz. They did announce that he will be inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame later this year. They said at a later date. The big question, PT, is that White House card is on the 14th. There is a pay-per-view, I'm told, or sorry, numbered event, old habit, scheduled, slated for July 11th. Will they do IFW International Fight Week in July? July 11th is around the time they usually do it. Historically, last couple of years, end of June. Or, like, they're not going to do the Hall of Fame in Washington, D.C., right? Like, there has to be, I don't know. I'm curious how this is all going to work. But anyway, shout out to the Dominator.
I think it weakens. Obviously, it, well deserved. You know,
yeah.
International Fight Week, you know, Vegas, way better, way more appropriate venue for it. But it, obviously, with the White House happening there and all the stuff they're talking about going to be on that event, you'd have to imagine a mid-July event to be quite weak if they're going to pull off all the things they claim they're going to pull off with the White House.
Yeah. But I thought it was cool how they did it right before the main card. He's up there with Bisping and Weidman. I think he just met Kate like 2 hours prior. So it's like, do you hug? Do you not hug? Do you do the handshake? You know what I mean? It's like,
I think I saw some people giving Kate, like, you know, oh, blah, blah, blah. Like, this is her first night on the job, mate. Like,
They were giving her a hard time.
Like, oh, she's not flowing like they usually do. I'm like, yeah, it's her first time here. She's one of the most experienced broadcasters they could have got. Like, it's a huge get. You know, give it this. Let's not focus on the little things, okay? We got a showcase tonight. This is what it's going to be like. Not the end of the world. Things will improve. Things will get tighter. I thought it was very good.
No, come on. I mean, she's one of the greatest hosts in sports.
She's too good for us. She's too good for us. Everyone relax.
Did you watch that lad climb the building in Taipei?
Fuck, I knew I was forgetting. What did he do?
No. I won't give you a spoiler. Tomorrow, instead of watching the bullshit footy, watch that instead. You don't need to watch that.
Arsenal and United tomorrow. Wait.
Yeah, watch that. Watch that. Don't watch. Do you know how much I'm thinking? Like, you know, there's like a record.
Oh, I know.
Snowstorm coming here. You know that? 20 inches.
And that's why Chuck is.
This is Chuck. Yeah, we miss Chuck. Did you read his story on Zuffa Boxing?
I have not read it yet. No, I'm going to use it as my Sunday supplement tomorrow. I can't wait.
Oh, it's great.
Because I was getting
a
few text messages. I have a feeling some things will pop up.
What, a couple things on the blower or from him?
Yeah. He was going to text me. I was asking him, like, what's it look like? How's it feel? And he was sending me some Mendelhall pearls of wisdom. So I'd assume they might make it into the copy. I love that he was there, though. It was because, you know, I got a few messages this morning. People were like, wow, like, it's amazing. I've never seen Max Kellerman this excited. Like, he's done all these massive HBO events.
Don't get me started.
All realistic takes I felt on Zuffa Boxing. Was going to revolutionize boxing. The uniforms are class. I mean,
we're going to get into this on Monday. By the way, now that we're doing an hour earlier, do you show up on the post numbered event Monday? I'm still not sure.
I don't know. I feel like I kind of have to because I missed all the
days. That's true. It's a good one. Well, we may need you. We may need you because, like I was saying, we're getting a historic snowstorm here. I was hoping to be able to watch, you know, my team punch their ticket to the Super Bowl on a beautiful snowstorm.
Is it that bad? You might not even be able to get to the studio on Monday.
I want to let the world know. I want to let the world know that there is a contingency plan in place. Andy leading the charge, Frank leading the charge, that we will do the show old school remote from here. We may not be able to get into the studio. I don't know. I don't know what to expect. Sometimes they say 20 inches and it ends up being 2. So we don't know what to expect.
But who's to check?
Story of my life. Story of my life, mate.
Anyway, the Chuck, I was waiting for the Chuck line. If a Zuffa Boxing takes place at the Meta Apex and no one is around to hear it, does it make a sound?
Sorry, sir, at the start.
So we're going to break that down. We'll give you our thoughts on Zuffa Boxing on Monday. We'll talk more about the bells and whistles of the show in the Paramount Plus era and the lack of Pip. Need the Pip.
I didn't know.
It's a big deal. I'm very upset about it because actually yesterday during Zuffa Boxing, I thought I found a workaround.
CBS login. I saw it. You and Frank really bonded. You and Frank really bonded through the PIP conversation. I was like, oh, Frank is in his fucking court here. He's like, oh, shit, here we go.
And then I tweeted about it because I was trying to give back to the community, and they stopped it. They were on to me.
Oh, fucking pricks.
Anything that makes me happy, they put the kibosh on it. It's unbelievable. But anyway.
It's tough.
It is tough, Terrence. It is tough. It was a great debut. It's no longer the dawn of a new era. The new era is here.
It's over.
So we can all move on with our lives. And guess what? Next week, we'll be right back here for another numbered event. The numbered event's not working for me. We need to come up with something better than that. I think PLE is great. I don't know why we had to go away from it. It's probably because WWE uses that name and Dana secretly hates being compared to WWE. That's my theory.
We need to think of a new name. We need to just give us 2 days of brainstorm. We'll come in with something on Monday.
At the end of the post shows, when I go to bed, I like to listen to music to try to soothe me. I think I'm going to listen to "I Fell in Love with the Girl at the Rock Show." She said what, and I told her that I didn't know. She's so cool, and I didn't mean better when she's around.
Can't wait till the birds go out.
I fell in love with the girl at the Rock Show. Sing it, Frank. Back on my call. I waited for her call. She always kept me. Frank, come on. I wasn't calling for this music. I was calling for the other music. There's no doubt that Frank, did you rock out to this song back in the day?
What the fuck is this? Oh, wow. Not a fan. That's Ariel's mate.
Yeah, that's crazy, bro. That's crazy. No.
Hey, Travis. Thank you. You did great today, mate.
Travis is the freaking man.
Nah, you said what you said.
Love that. In the cage. proper MMA fan and a proper fan of ours as well. So shout out to him.
I was a big transplant fans, even to be honest, Travis. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Congratulations to all the winners. Congratulations to Justin Gaethje. We never doubted you, Justin. 2-time interim champion. The rare distinction. No. Why are you putting the music down, Frank? You committed to it. Lean all the way in, bro. Lean all the way in.
Sorry, Travis. Commiserations. Sorry,
to Patrick Pimblett. It's been a tough year for the Scousers, for the Reds.
Lost to Barnum today as well.
Did they really?
3-2, last kick of the game.
Wow, it's been a tough one over at Anfield. But they'll never walk alone, that is for certain. And he will certainly be back. And we shall be back as well. We'll be back on Monday to go over this a little more in-depthly. Go to uncrowned.com. Please like, subscribe, follow, do all the things that you do. Shout out to Arena Club as well. ArenaClub.com/Uncrowned. 20% off with the code Uncrowned. We appreciate them very much. Appreciate the crew back there. Get home safe. Much love. Stay strong. Stay warm. Stay hunkered down Northeast. And hopefully we'll see you all on Monday. Good night.